Welcome to the Black Tower Podcast, a Wheel of Time podcast. Tonight, you have the illustrious sounds of the lovely and talented Andrew, our Bijan Mihail over there, and the unfortunate and regularly uncouth sounds of your Amankan Mihail over here, Mr. Daniel. And we are joined by the spiritual and ethereal sounds of our Tsoravan Mihail, who is out in North Carolina, West Virginia. Somewhere over on the East. One of the 13 colonies.
Mountain Mama, Shenandoah River, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. One of the 13 colonies.
Someplace that's almost heaven, apparently.
He's in an airport, so he could unfortunately not join us for tonight's recording, but he will presumably be back next week as he normally is. But, hi guys. Everything's exciting.
As soon as you said like the illustrious sounds, it was so hard not to just immediately try to go full Boomhauer. Dango Hadouken, man.
That would have been
great. That was too like...
Yikes.
I just lost like half of the English language.
I mean,
too intelligible for Boomhauer.
That was a little too intelligible. I could understand what you were actually saying.
Yeah.
And not just the last two words, like the whole statement. But you know what's easy to understand is where to find all of your Black Tower information. That is going to be at blacktowerpod.com. You can find literally anything you're looking for at our website, our Twitter, all of our social handles, the YouTube videos, the last five of them that have been put out, unless it's maybe like the last five of them, because Andrew hasn't gotten around to
I updated today at work.
Yes, excellent. You can also find our merch.
I earned my 25 cent this month.
Yes. You can also find our merch over at, you know, the different places that we have them. You can also find information about a bunch of different stuff. Speaking of...
That is the best merch plug ever. You can find our merch at the places it is.
Well, we have three different places and one of them is a plug. So, like...
We have three?
Well, okay. Technically, we have two for the
what
Black
merch
Tower.
What merch store have you made that I don't know about? I'm fine with it. I just want to know.
We've got the merch store over at Spreadshirt, which is the first one we ever got. And then we joined with New Creations by Jen, who is amazing. And you should definitely go over and check out her website. It's the only place that you can actually get the vast majority of the Frosty Mugs. So if you want to be the Frosty Mug Society, then you go over to New Creations by Jen. And then our third one, sort of, is another plug. And that is if you click on the chibi, then you go over to the Crystal Barista, who is Josh's better half and doesn't actually sell any Black Tower merch. She just sells good merch. So if you want good merch, go over to the Crystal Barista. She has everything for you as far as shiny clack clacks, as far as, you know, energy rocks, as far as anything along those lines. She also does subscription boxes, which I think they just finished up this last week. So it's pretty cool. Go over and check that out. And then last but certainly not least, once you are done with all of that stuff at our website, if you are hungry for more content, pop over to thegreatblight.com. You can find a bunch of different content creators in a bunch of different categories over there. There's a great, almost comprehensive list, because I'm sure there are a few that have fallen through the cracks, but the vast majority of the content creators in the Wheel of Time community are over there, in a list that breaks them up by what they do effectively or how they do it. And you can also find a spoiler-free wiki, which is an absolutely brilliant idea that I don't know how didn't catch on immediately and way quicker, because it's genius. And that, for those of you who don't know what a spoiler-free wiki is, because it's not really been a thing, you can plug in what book you're on, or basically you can look at what book you're on and do a, I want to look up this character, but not go past where I am in the books and find out how they die or what amazing things they do in the very last book, or, you know, all of these different things that you don't know yet and want to find out organically, you can go ahead and go all the way up to the book you are and stop there. And then you won't find out any information about them past that point. But everything that they've done before then is all welcome for you to look at. It's an absolutely great idea. I think it's pretty brilliant. Nablus is a brilliant guy. So there you go. Yep.
And if you're looking at merch and you're like, I don't know what thing to get, can you guys just choose something randomly for me? If you help support us on Patreon at the dedicated tier or higher, there are times where we send you random merch. If you're at the dedicated tier, it's every once every 6 months. Ashaman tier is once every 3 months, and it does include the once every 6 months from the previous tier. Quindiar Ashaman is the same, and Zen Ashaman get random merch every month, which means you get double merch on months that double up with previous tiers. So
correct.
It'd be pretty cool. If you do that, please do let us know what shirt / hoodie / sweater sizes you wear, because if you don't, we do default to generally a men's large, unless the item has a unisex option, then it's just a unisex large. But apparently they're pretty decent with swapping out stuff. We had to do that. So, and I think they even said, like, oh yeah, we can swap it out. We'll send it out. Just keep the other one, you know, give it away as a gift or something.
Yeah, it was very kind of them.
Yeah, don't print on demand. It's print on demand.
They are actually very nice. Yeah.
But
cool.
All that being said and done, again, we said it last episode, we're going to say it again, because we want to see you all there. We want y'all to come out and experience it. It's going to be a ton of fun. This coming April 22nd through the 24th of 2022 is JordanCon in Atlanta, Georgia. JordanCon.org for all the information, FAQ about that. Shortly after we did the last plug, they did release another, or they released the dates. They're going to release another 100 tickets. I believe it's the 14th of this month. So
damn nice. So if you have not gotten a ticket, keep a lookout, because you will at least almost guaranteed get another shot at it, which is great. Yeah.
Well, I mean, well, by the time you're listening to this, there's a good chance they're sold out, because you won't hear this until the 21st. But
correct. But still keep paying attention, because there's a chance that they'll do it again. I don't know how many tickets they have that they can release. So just keep an eye out, because you may get a chance to get them again. But you didn't come to hear us blather on about things.
Well, there's one more.
You came to hear about WattCon specifically.
Yeah, okay. Nice segue. If you can't make JordanCon or you're unable to get a ticket for that, for JordanCon, do not fret. It's an annual event. But in July of this year, from July 8th to the 10th, will be WattCon. The three of us at Black Tower Podcast will also be there. So WattCon.com for all the information there. If you can make it, we'd love to see you there. Love to have you there. So go and check it out. It'll be a ton of fun. It is the only dedicated Wheel of Time convention that I am aware of. So, yeah.
Indeed.
Moving on from that, because we actually have things to talk about besides, you know, plugging our stuff and a bunch of other people's stuff. We're going to start off with saying hello to a very fantastic and very special guest. If you are on the Tickety Talkities, or every Monday you tune in on YouTube for the Will and Chill Show, you will recognize our fantastic friend here, the Taviran Tavern. Go ahead and say hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm really stoked to be here. Thank you all for inviting me.
We are really stoked to have you. So thanks for coming on.
Absolutely.
After clever wording and about 16 different tricks, we were able to trick you into agreeing. And now you're stuck here.
All right. If there was any tricks involved, you said, hey, you want to? I'm like, yes. Pretty much how that happened.
Yes. It's always a trick. We approach very kindly.
That's our trick.
And then you get stuck. Yeah. We approach very kindly, and then you get stuck with, like, why? Why did I do that?
That's our secret, Cap. We're always tricky.
That's awesome. I'm really happy to be here, actually. Very excited. Excellent.
Well, since you're here, please tell all of the lovely people. Andrew already told us a little bit about some of the things that you do, but we'd love to hear, what do you do? Where can people find you? And what do you want to tell the people at home about Tavirin Tavern or Wheel and Chill or whatever it is that you're doing out there on the interwebs?
Okay, cool. Thank you. So Tavirin Tavern, I primarily I'm on TikTok and Twitter. I have started an Instagram. I've got a fledgling YouTube channel that I haven't done anything with because I'm still kind of figuring that out. I'm a gamer, huge gamer. Monday nights, I am a co-host with Critter XD and Wine Spring Cafe on the Wheel and Chill show. I see Moshadi in here, which comes to our show regularly and makes us laugh our asses off.
Moshadi.
Yeah.
How dare you?
It's amazing. and so we have a lot of fun there. Also, I design merch. You can find me, look for Tavirin Tavern on redbubble.com. I also have some of the same stuff, but on tpublic.com, which is also Tavirin Tavern. Aside from that, that's pretty much me. I mean, I do some Twitch stuff, but as under a different name for, you know, some streaming. That's about it.
Fair. Awesome. Enough.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic. I mean, it's pretty rare that I can scroll through TikTok without coming across, you know, at least three or four of of your videos on there. So. They're always awesome. Entertaining.
Thank you.
I enjoy them. So, topic for today, we're going to talk about changes. It's all the rage right now. It has been all the rage since at least the 24th changes. Of December of 2021, and well before. How the Wheel of Time TV show since was absolutely ruined by Rave Jet. No, that's a joke.
Yeah,
it's fucking fantastic. It's different, and we're gonna talk about it. And because we are a full spoiler podcast, we need to make sure that you are protected from any and all potential tainty spoilers. So here is your spoiler warning for this episode from the fantastic and lovely Kate Reading and Michael Kramer.
This episode contains spoilers from the entire Wheel of Time series.
If you have not read the series, you are at risk of being spoiled.
You have been warned.
Flicker, 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 flicker.
That is the best thing I've ever heard. That's amazing.
Yeah, we are super lucky to have gotten them to go ahead and do that for us. They were amazing. Nice.
That is probably one of the oldest audio files on my computer, which it's not that old. It's only from 2018. Wow. Yeah, I generally don't keep a bunch of files on my computer that long.
And so, yet.
There might be. Actually, no. There's not even Black Tower podcast recordings that are older than that because all of those were recorded by Aaron because Aaron was doing everything that time. I'm email people.
Right. No, I will sometimes go back and comb through some things, and I have a stupid number of just external hard drives that have things on them that I was too much of a hoarder to delete, but not enough of they don't actually matter enough to my life on the day to day that I need access to them immediately.
I have an external hard drive that, among other things, has every bit of report, writing, paper, whatever, from both my college degrees. They're all categorized by class, by date, by grade. I hoard shit on my computer.
Yep.
No joke.
I feel you.
Yeah.
I absolutely feel you.
Yeah. My art folder for the Illustrator, every design is in there. If my computer dies, I'm screwed.
Well, you regularly back that up, right?
Yeah. Okay.
I do have every file from when I, started doing the editing and everything for the podcast.
Yeah. That's cool.
In fact, the archives for what I have of season one and season two are actually double backed up on two different mechanical hard drives. So I was like, I have these mechanical hard drives. I'm going to use them for something. And then through an NVMe and an SSD. So
I really should back up my art.
Yeah. No, you definitely should.
You said that and I was like, You said that. I was like, oh, shit, I have it back.
To come here.
I did not.
To hear us talk about hard drives. You came here to talk about, or to hear us talk about, because you're not actually here to say things. He is, Tavirian Tavern is, but you're not as a listener. Will someday, you will be, but today is not that day. Tavirian Tavern is here to talk about changes between the book and the show, and what they mean for the series, what we liked, what we didn't like, what worked, what didn't work, what we're hopeful for the next, just everything that comes to mind when it comes to what changed between the printed word and the television representation. So to kick things off,
you know how hard it's going to be not to clickbait title this? Just to screw with the people that absolutely hated everything about the TV show, be like, how Rafe Judkins ruined the Wheel of Time. And then they just get in and it's just singing the praises, or, you know, not being absolutely like hateful towards it.
Right.
It counts. It counts the views. It's all.
And then when they go ahead and start making angry comments later, that counts as metrics. So,
well, they can't be mad. It's not even clickbaity because I said it in the episode. So
you did.
Technically, it is a title from episode content.
Yep.
That's so true.
So really, we're going to start off
or ease the ourselves cloaks, I guess I
into
say.
This just a little bit. As far as I have a question for sort of all three of us, and that is taking yourself out of the fact that we are super fans of this series on paper, as far as a just strictly book to television series goes, how do you think the adaptation was, as far as like on a scale of 1 to 10, which I don't love but is probably the best way to do this, on a scale of, or actually here, let's do it simpler, on a scale of disagree, neutral, or agree, do you agree with the choices that they made for the adaptation, or do you think that they were a little bit of a problem? Do you disagree with Rafe and you would have done it, you know, a lot different? And I mean that is a lot different. Not like, oh, I wouldn't have changed this one thing, but all of the other ones can stay. Like, almost every change was not great, or the vast majority of the changes were great, or kind of half and half. So we'll start with Andrew as far as just agree with the changes, neutral on the changes, or disagree with the changes from book to television show.
Since we're kind of pigeonholed into three categories.
Yeah.
I'm still going to caveat it and be like, episodes 1 through 7, I agree with the changes made. Episode 8, I'm going to maintain neutrality on that.
Okay. All right. Tavirian Tavern, what do you think?
Given that,
and you can caveat if you want, that's also
totally. I mean, given that there were little things that I didn't agree with, but
sure,
there were quite a few things that I was completely fine with, I'm gonna go with neutral across the board.
Nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah.
I will definitely say that as a book fan personally, I definitely will say that I was neutral as well. There were so many things that I was like, you really didn't need to do that, as far as the story you're telling currently. And granted, again, I do still reserve judgment to a certain extent. If later on they do prove me wrong, I'm okay with that, but you don't get to lean back on "we'll prove you wrong later" if you're putting out one season right now. So there were a lot of things that I was like, you didn't need to do that for the story you're telling currently. But then there were a lot of things where I was like, hell yeah, you needed to do that to tell the story you're telling.
Well, I mean, I think to get into a discussion like this, like, there's a couple things that kind of have to be acknowledged. Chief among them is an adaptation, not a remake.
No, 100%.
It was not a shot for shot. And anybody that's like, we need it shot for shot, I point you back to the pilot that shall not be named to see how bad that can go. Because that was pretty much, hey, we're just going to take the prologue of The Eye of the World and we're going to essentially make that the script. And the best thing about this is just going to be the fact that Billy Zane was there.
Yep. Uh-huh.
So, but the other thing is, for at least 3 years, Rafe and Sarah and Brandon and Harry and everybody that, you know, that had a public voice that was involved in this production literally gave the warning. There are changes. Yeah. There are some that you're going to be fine with. There are some that you're not going to like. And Rafe has maintained that throughout. Shortly before or shortly after episode 8 came out, he did an interview. It was before because it was the Q&A with Alvaro Morte. And he mentioned that he was surprised at how many of the diehard super fans of the series, like Sarah Nakamura, really supported and enjoyed the series. He was like, I didn't see that much support coming. And by the end of episode 8, I understood the comment and the sentiment a bit more. But yeah, so like those are some things that like kind of I think like have to be kept in mind. Like there are things intrinsically about the nature of the production that's going to make it different.
Well, and I do want to throw out there, I don't want to excuse anything about production because of the way that the world worked at the time that they needed to put it together. Because there are things that you can, and in some ways are extremely justified to not be in love with or not even like.
Right.
Based on just the way that they ended up being on screen. I mean, The Blight comes to mind. And the fact that Matt is not in the last two episodes. These are things that we all recognize kind of needed to happen in the meta of the making of this season. But you don't have to like that. You can think that's a bad change, even if you completely understand that they had less choice in the matter because of the way that the world worked. And that is okay. And I am actually one of those people. I think The Blight is a little bit of a travesty, even though I will accept it and appreciate what was given, especially because I know that there was a better one. It was planned.
Yeah.
I'm like, motherfucker. Like,
yeah, the Canary Island thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh my as God, I said, that would have been amazing.
It is good to understand and know those things, but you don't have to like them. And I've definitely heard a lot of people online being like, no, but you have to like, but like these things are true. And you're like, yeah, they're true. I know that. I appreciate that. But it doesn't mean that there wasn't other things they could have done that weren't the Canary Islands, but also weren't episode 8 Blight. Like, come on.
I gave them props on The Blight and The Ways, for example, primarily from a production standpoint.
Sure.
Because one, here you have, just like any show, right, that is being filmed, mm-hmm. You're in season one. You don't know if it's going to get picked up. You're just doing your stuff. You don't have the big budget, right? They always start off with a smaller budget. If it's a success, you get more money, right? Yep. So the fact that they made The Ways modular, almost like a hex grid on a D&D table, right? and that's exactly what they did. If you look at the behind the scenes, and they just shifted it around to make different angles, which I thought was ingenious.
Monsters use the hex grid. Come on.
Yes, true. That's true. But I mean, from a production standpoint, I thought it was pretty good. Yeah. Better than squares on screen, really. I mean, I'm just going to say that.
I mean, we did have a few squares on screen.
It's true.
Fucking Lyle. You're amazing, but you're such a square.
This is so true. You're such a nerd. The Blight, they went with something repetitive, again, something that was easy to put on screen. And I still like the way The Blight looked better than the Trollocs coming through Tarwin's gap. That was horrendous. and you can't even blame that shit. You can't even blame it on COVID because
you can't.
You're talking
that
about
was just special something effects
guys
that was
sit in a goddamn room with a computer. They don't have to talk to anybody. They have all the time in the freaking world. I mean, overall, yeah, there are things that I didn't like, but
of course.
Yeah. I mean, I look at it from I went to an entertainment college, university, mm-hmm. where we did script writing, and one of my degrees is in game design. So,
So you're like, this is your episode. This is excellent.
There's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff in there, right? But again, even like if you watch a movie, for example, Star Wars, what was the one where they, it was the last in the last three trilogies where they rammed the ship. She rammed the ship into the big dreadnought.
Not the Last Jedi, the one before that.
It
is the Last Jedi.
Is that the Last Jedi? Okay.
Yeah, because the last one's Rise of Skywalker. So it's Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker.
Right. In those movies, right, you had a CGI Grand Moff Tarkin, right?
Mm-hmm.
CGI. In those movies, you had a CGI Leia.
Yeah.
That most people that don't know CGI thought that some of them were good enough to look real.
Oh yeah.
Tarkin in particular looked really good.
Dude, Rogue One Tarkin was amazing.
Yeah.
He's there a long time, if you will.
Yeah.
Or at least a significant thing. Yeah.
But like I said, even to the untrained eye, they're like, oh, that's, but you can still kind of tell. But then you go to the Trollocs from freaking yeah, I see that. You go to the Trollocs from Tarwin's Gap, and it's like, Jesus Christ.
Well, and the crazy
part is, it's like Lego again, Star Wars or whatever.
Right. It's also never like,
see the light of day. Like, literally.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The craziest part about that is
semi-passable in the dark. Like, they're semi-passable.
I was going to say that is I didn't think they looked horrendous. I will break from the group a little bit to say but definitely not good. And especially one of the reasons that I thought that they were worse than they necessarily could have been was the fact that the ones in Emmons Field were actually very nice in a lot of ways.
It's because they were people in those suits. Well,
exactly.
Yeah.
And they just the fact that they couldn't actually make it not seamless, because that was never going to happen in terms it's so different between the practical effects versus the CGI.
Yeah.
But the fact that they couldn't actually make it similar was rough. Yeah
Because even in the earlier episodes when you see the Trollocs, right, and you have the mix of actors in effects, makeup, and then the CGI mixed together, you can still pick out the CGI ones pretty easily, but they don't look horrible.
But for some reason, when you got 1,000 of them on the screen at once, they just looked yikes.
And what made it worse was that it was dark.
Yeah.
So they could have hidden a lot of it.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that it was dark, and it just made it worse.
Yeah.
The Trollocs, I mean, episode one Trollocs.
Almost Last Airbender.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully the new live action is a lot better. It already looks better.
I hope so. Fingers crossed. I actually put the Trollocs from episode one, right? The effects makeup.
Yeah.
As my bar for everything to come, because it was so good. And I said, if they put that much time and effort into freaking Trollocs, Loyal better be out of this freaking world. And I was disappointed a little bit.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
I was disappointed.
Feel you.
Yeah.
So, quick
question, because we didn't ask this before the episode. What name would you like us to call you?
That was good. I thought about that.
I mean, on the Wheel and Chill Show, we go by our internet names, right? Our tags. So that's Tavern. You can call me George or Tavern or whatever the hell you want to call me. You can call me Jerk, whatever. I don't care. I'm pretty relaxed about that. So
all right, so Andrew,
whatever you feel comfortable with,
you go with Tavern and I'll go with Jerk. Excellent. Nice.
Give him the good old Tavern Jerk.
Yeah.
Pretty
sure that was episode one.
That's gonna cost you extra for a Tavern Jerk.
We almost started that episode earlier, but
yeah. I mean, so that's one thing too, like we're talking about the changes and all, and one of the big questions in everything was kind of like, how much of this looked to be changes that Rafe made for creative reasons, for storytelling purposes, and how much of this was, you know, potentially some of the more the suits upstairs saying we need to do something different or something, potentially. Obviously, we don't know.
I'll be honest with you.
We saw one of the... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't see any suit-type changes that at least stick out to me.
Well, what I was getting at was the script that came out for Leave Taking. It was written by Rafe, and it looked like it included some more stuff. I mean, I still believe that they still shot the Empty Road-esque.
They
not had, Empty Road-esque, but the Tam Fever Dream scene while they were shooting episode one.
I think they did a 2-hour episode, right? It was going to be the pilot, a 2-hour episode. And that's where the decision to shorten to 1 hour, that came from the Suits. But as far as creative decisions, I don't think the Suits had anything. But I mean, they definitely had changes in, okay, you only have an hour.
That's kind of what I meant.
Episodes.
You know, the Suits come down and say, hey, we love what you're doing, but we're only slotting, you know, a 60-minute episode. You've got to shorten it. And then from there, like, you do have to make the hard decision. Like, you've already pared everything that you want included in down. So now whenever Johnny Law comes by and says, it's too long, you got to make it shorter. You got to, like, what is the least important to keep in this?
That is one of the things that I do actually want to say as a mild and not full caveat on this question is that, okay, I am not a Suits fan. Show, fantastic. But like the actual guys, not great. Yeah. I am not, because I do think that regularly it is their job to think about the bottom line. And they do that effectively, but often to the detriment of the actual product.
Always.
And I definitely want to say that there is a little bit of a difference of Rafe writing a 2-hour episode, going to them and saying, hey, this is what we have, and them saying, yeah, but we only have an hour though.
Yeah.
Versus something along the lines of the Suits from the get-go basically being like, all right, cool. We have season one. This is your budget. This is the amount of money that we can give you for this season. Because those are two somewhat different statements, because one is Rafe going to them and them saying, oh, yeah, but you can't do that, though. The other is, this is the expectation from the jump. Rafe, you need to put together a show that works with that, because there isn't such a thing as unlimited money. There really isn't. And that one's an understandable one. Definitely the, like, write whatever you want. Oh, wait, no, it has to be an hour, though, is a little frustrating.
I mean, if we're going to tackle the money aspect, then my question then would become, why did the Trollocs look so much better in episode one than episode eight? If anything, I would think it should be the reverse.
Agreed. I think, so,
yeah,
like I said, they look much better because they had a mix of actors in effects makeup and CGI mixed together. So you had the realism of the actors in their bodysuits and whatnot, kind of blurring out the CGI stuff, right? Because you were basically, I mean, I know I was focused on the actors as opposed to the CGI Trollocs. So you just didn't notice it as much. We actually talked about this, I think, when you were gone for a second there.
I could still hear you.
Okay. Dang it, I'm at a loss here. I was going to say something, totally forgot.
No worries. If it comes back to you.
Yeah. It was that the fact that in daylight in the earlier episodes, the Trollocs just looked much better. And then episode eight, when they had the darkness of the set really for their CGI, for whatever reason, they just looked horrid. They looked choppy. They looked, I mean, I don't know what happened. They had the perfect excuse to cover them up with darkness and it still came through as horrible. No clue.
Well, and of course, again, as I said earlier, I don't want to hand wave, and I'm definitely not hand waving. But this is definitely a little bit of a question of I definitely haven't heard any real reports about what happened between episode six and episode eight, as far as what COVID and the CGI team and different things changed.
Right.
And so again, I'm not trying to hand wave. I'm not. I will absolutely admit and agree that the Trollocs in episode eight do not look good. they don't. And there isn't a great excuse for that. But I also haven't heard any explanation for it either, which I would like to hear before I'm just like, sort of just like spitballing as far as what the problem could have been. Because I'm sure that we're going to figure out at some point what the difference between the team that was doing this section and what the team was doing from this section, right, why it was so drastic. I mean,
the disconnect.
If the reason is like we ran out of budget, we were, you know, tight on the budget. And I can understand that. But if it's a timeline thing, then whoever is responsible for that hard set timeline that says, no, you will be done by this time, you had the sympathy and the understanding from production already taking a pause from COVID.
Yes.
Yeah. You already had it because it wasn't already released. People would have definitely understood, hey, it's a crazy time. There's a pandemic, delaying it, you know, a month or a couple months to finalize and polish off the CGI like it deserved to be.
Well,
money you can't really control. Time you can't, especially when it's
also on your part. What I was going to say is it may or may not, for example, have been a scheduling thing, because I know that the teams on different shows for Amazon, they don't just work on one.
Right.
They regularly work on multiple shows. And in that case, it absolutely may have been, okay, well, you guys have this much time to go ahead and finish this project. Then you move on to this project. Then you move on to this project. Now, when this project gets pushed because they're not even finished filming for different parts of it, so you have nothing to CGI, and it starts bleeding into this project or this project or this project, now timelines get really messed up. And again, I'm not disagreeing that, okay, well, that means that you should just push the whole slate back, for example. But it does get very impractical when you have the same people or the same team or whatever having like huge scheduling conflicts now.
Yeah, you
end up like whole things because, you know, months of changes happen.
Yeah, you're basically doing a lot of context switching between one project and the other. And then on top of that, my issue was this, especially with the Trollocs in episode 8, they weren't actors.
No.
Right? They were not actors. You did not have to bring anybody back onto a set or a studio to all you had to do was redo the CGI. And so it's like, and they had time because by the time they wrapped up season one to the time that they, you know, put the show out in November, they had time to fix that. Again, presumably, you don't have to, you don't have actors to come in. You don't have to do anything else. It's all done in a studio or, you know, in a dev shop with the artist.
Yep.
It could have been fixed. Maybe they didn't see the issue. Maybe they thought it was good enough. I don't know.
Yeah. That would be a worse problem.
That's a whole nother problem. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But as I said, I don't want to hand wave because I definitely think that there were real problems with that CGI. And I want to hard agree with that, even if I'm coming a little bit to, you know, a certain defense or trying to explain certain things, because I know that not everybody who is listening or watching the show knows as much about this world as a number of the people on this show. I'm only giving extra information. I'm definitely not telling anybody that they're wrong. I'm definitely not telling anybody, but but you should be thinking about that. No.
I mean, but it's part of what makes like this show work.
Yeah.
Like, you know, everybody has like their areas of expertise and their area of experience and their different things they've researched or whatever. And if it was, you know, if every show was, you know, us three guys that are normally on BTP for
23 minutes,
or even us, if we cherry pick guests to only pick guests that we knew would 100% agree with us, it'd be a boring show.
Absolutely.
Now going on 4 years of an echo chamber, which is boring.
But and to go back to, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're fine. I was about to segue us to move on.
Oh, I was going to say, going back to the whole episode one thing that we were talking about. You know, whether the suits cut it short or whatever, which is the original, I think, question. Again, if I remember correctly, Rafe saying in an interview somewhere that he had these scripts written out years ago.
Yep.
Right? Years ago. So it comes down to, if it comes down to them from the get-go saying you have this many hours, this many episodes, period, or oh, you did this. Nope, we got to till it to an hour after the fact.
Yeah.
Well, Shadi's killing me over there. you know, I just get confused because, one, I think we all agree that episode one was rushed, right? There was a lot going on. I get from a storytelling perspective, people were upset that they didn't introduce Senbui and all these other people. And I'm like, they're not the main characters.
They're not. Right?
Just like Harry
Potter. You already have so much exposition to do. Like,
there's so much crap in that town to begin with. But
like Senbui. He's crap in that town.
Right. But, you know, it comes down to the fact that, they didn't have to have all that stuff. And it just bothers me that of all the shit that they left in the episode, we got that cold open that was useless as far as cold opens go.
Hey,
no, that first cold open was probably the worst one.
Don't you talk about
that. I would disagree.
Which one do you think is which one do you think is the worst one?
The one that I think like did the least to like give any kind of exposition. Or to like give us any information, honestly, the cold open for episode 8.
Bruh, that's not
we
Luz Theron?
we really didn't add anything to the story.
No,
I will say the payoff for the cold open of episode 1 doesn't pay off until after you kind of learn what the Red Aja do.
Yeah, way later. True. But it was like there was no context to it. Anybody coming into this fresh is just like, it's a bunch of women chasing down a guy, you know, and then he's screaming. And then another woman with a guy up on a cliff are looking down going, oh, that's cool. And then they ride the fuck off. So,
you know,
like,
all of the cold opens sound bad when you just diminish them like that.
I mean, the original written cold open was fantastic, but.
I mean, go ahead. Sorry.
This is going to make me sound like such an Amazon shill. I promise I'm not, even though we've been called.
Everybody already knows who you are. They can see.
I actually really liked, I think one of the best things about the series was every cold open. And granted, I will absolutely agree with you, Tavern, that.
Traitor.
If I didn't know so much about the books.
Yeah.
The first one isn't nearly as powerful. I get that. I appreciate that. I'm definitely saying you're right. But also, like, especially as a book reader, but even talking to non-book readers, a lot of them actually felt that one was pretty powerful. Now, again, I'm not just saying, like, oh, my friends thought it was this way, so you're wrong. You're not. Your opinion is 100% valid.
I agree. I did have some people that said it was good, but I mean, from most of the people that I've watched it with are non-book readers, right? I've actually got converted 2 people into reading the book so far, which is great. But if you're looking at it, and I went into this because I knew it was an adaptation. I knew there were going to be changes. I didn't want to be that person that's like, oh, well, that blade of grass wasn't in the book. And that fart didn't happen until chapter 3 or whatever the hell it was. I went into it because, again, script writing, been through all that stuff, and I'm looking at it. I know they had to make changes. There's so much inner dialogue happening in the books that you cannot translate onto the screen. So I love the fact that they went the way I
Perrin's
I
tell people, character.
Yeah, the way I look at it and the way I've explained it to people is they're telling the story between the sentences, right, from different characters. The fact that this whole first season was pretty much focused on Moiraine makes sense. She spent 20 freaking years looking for this guy. Makes complete sense that she's the one that you're looking at things through.
20 fucking years for this fucking guy right here. I tell you what.
This Scaramouche, this guy. but so it's cool.
Scaramouche, can you do the Fandango? I tell you what.
But the freaking cold open for episode 1, if you didn't know what was going on, you still didn't know what was going on after that cold open.
No, that's fair.
I mean, that's it. I didn't hate it. I just think it was probably the weakest of the cold opens for me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. All right. I have a new question to ask, which is going to be very similar. And maybe we'll actually have another answer that's the same thing. but we'll start with you, Tavern.
Okay.
What is your, and again, this is going to be a hard question and you might need to think about it for a second. What is the biggest change from the books to the television show that you found the best, found the coolest, found the most useful, found the whatever, that was just the biggest change that you agreed with, that you thought was a good change?
Okay. That's easy. I don't even think about it.
Oh,
the warders. The warders and Lan. The humanizing of the warders and Lan. Period. For me, that was the best thing out there. The fact that we didn't get a cold dead guy just walking around not saying shit. And again, I mean, I'm a vet as well. So for me, it just hit home because it's very, they've made the warders more of a military unit. Even though they're individual Aes Sedai, right? But they train together, they're comrades in arms. You see it in episode 3, I believe, when they're sitting around the campfire and they're telling stories. Or is it 4? And they're telling stories and whatnot.
My favorite episode of the entire series.
Mine was 5. Four. Yeah, mine was 5, but it's followed by 4.
Yeah.
But it just reminded me of being out in the field. And they did such a damn good job with the relationships and just the humanizing of the warders. That's it.
Well, and one of the things that I do want to mention really quick, just because I think we've talked about it a little bit before, excuse me, but not that much, is you rarely get to see warders in the tower in the books.
Right.
And if you think about it, the books talk about and very strongly suggest, but you don't actually see a whole lot of like actual sort of seeing it happen, of just how close the warders actually can get and how camaraderie they absolutely become in the tower. Now, granted, I will admit, and to anybody thinking of this, you're not alone. Lan doesn't get a whole lot of that. He definitely spends the vast majority of his time outside of the tower. But if you think about Galad and Gawain, which is the biggest example of the like characters that we see go through warder training in some ways in the tower, they
try even not to think about Gawain.
I know, I tried not to as well, but they go through a lot of training with themselves or with each other and the other warders and the captain of the warder guard and all of this different stuff. And theirs is even cut short because of the Elida coup, and they still get a lot of time with the other warders, so much that Gawain ends up being the leader of a band of warders because they trust him so fucking much that afterwards they run around together and have this whole entire storyline about sort of just them and the Aes Sedai that they're with. So I couldn't agree more in terms of the, like, it really does. We miss a lot of that on the actual page in the books, but it is there if you read into it. And I love that about the, you know, whether it was Sarah, whether it was Rafe, whether it was whatever, putting that into the screen in a way that was short, sweet, and to the point, but gave you a lot more information than a number of pages of the books, because that wasn't the focus. That wasn't what Robert Jordan needed to tell you at the time, even though it's there, it's just between the lines.
It was usually something like, you know, Maria Sedai going through the whatever with her warders in tow or something. They didn't get a lot of absolutely.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, I think they've done a great job.
I agree. Andrew, what, going back to the original question, just I really liked that one, so I wanted to stop for
a second. I could tell.
Andrew.
Set you on a whole tirade. I quite enjoyed really listening. That's how you know, like, Daniel really, really liked a point. I mean, we all do it. I'd have to say, like, my favorite change is the exposition for Loghain. I really like how in one fell swoop of one episode, they completely communicated the actual danger of false dragons. But in the same token, 100% humanized Loghain. It's not like in the books where, okay, you've heard of this false dragon, they claim they're something they're really not, or whatever. They say they're dangerous, and then you're just left like, okay, thanks hearsay for telling me something, but I don't, how am I supposed to believe it? But you actually see it, and then Loghain gets humanized enough to a point to where when you actually see him captured and him resisting capture, like, you actually do, or at least I did, you kind of feel for the guy. Because, yes, he was just enthralled in, like, a whole battle, but, like, the last thing you see of that whole event of him, you know, essentially conquering Galdea is him looking at the king and being like, Gaelden, sorry.
No, you're good.
But you see him sit there and, like, look at the king and be like, no, I am not going to kill you. You know, they say, you know, that, you know, I'm going to break the world, but I mean to, you know, tie it together. And it very much humanizes who Loghain is. And people that are never readers or first time readers and haven't got there, like, that is an incredibly crucial point for Loghain further on in the series.
Yes.
Yeah. And that brings to mind something that they did throughout the season, which was recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have Loghain basically recruiting the king of Gaelden. You have what's her face? The red, goddamn it.
Leandrin,
thank you. We call her strong Jaws Sedai. Leandrin.
I mean,
Leandrin trying to recruit Nynaeve. Moraine trying to recruit Egwene. You know, you have the Tinkers, Isla, trying to recruit Perrin. It's a motif throughout the entire season. So it's amazing to me that little things that you took for granted in the books are being played out on the screen in a different way. And they make sense. Yes. They make sense. And they makes, I think, the story better to an extent.
Yeah. And then you harken back to, you know, being time as ever. By the way, what branch were you?
Oh, don't, you're going to laugh, bro. All right. So 6 years active duty Marine Corps. And then I spent 23 years in the Army Guard, Reserve, and Air Guard. So three branches.
Why would I laugh?
Because I bounced.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I wasn't sure because I
was 8 years Air Guard. So
yeah, I was, I get a lot of shit for being in three different services. But it's, you know, things not I chose.
You don't.
Okay, cool. I appreciate that.
I literally had a guy in my unit that went the same path. He started off Marines. Mm-hmm. He was in the initial push in Desert Storm, I believe.
Yeah.
And then he left the Marine Corps, went to the Army Reserves, left Army Reserves, and came to the Air Guard.
Yeah, I went in the Marine Corps and just picked something. I ended up being a ground support equipment mechanic and did 6 years. Toward the end of my 6 years, I had a staff sergeant go, you need to go MI. So I said, okay, I want to reenlist, but I want to get a lat move. And they were like, nope, this is his exact words, were stop trying to rise above your station. We've made you what you are, and that's what you're always going to be. And I went, all right, thank you. I get out in 2 weeks. And I got out and I found an Army Guard unit. It was an MI unit down, you know, back home in South Florida. And nice. I spent the next 23 years in military intelligence just doing shit.
Yeah.
But that's fantastic. It's one of the things I always want to hear more. And I am now going to pester you, like, professionally, but pester you about coming on Vets Discuss in the future.
Oh yeah, you're good, man. Thank you.
But to harken back to the Vets, I know from myself, I mean, the scene with Loghain in front of the Amaryllis seat.
Yeah.
I think that is emotional for most people. But if you look at it kind of from that vet perspective, that military experience perspective, and kind of like situations that we call similar style emotions, it resonates on a different wavelength. I don't want to say a different level because that implies it's like a higher or lower level.
Yeah, you're right.
Sure.
So that was like that to me. That was like just the I feel bad saying it, but the cherry on top of the Loghain story from season one was just how that went down.
Course, my favorite thing about that storyline is the fact that I wanted so much more of it. out of the television show. And as a book reader, I know it's fucking coming. And the best part is that, like, if I was just watching the show, I would be a little disappointed with the Loghain storyline, because it does get tied up with sort of a bow. I'm not saying it doesn't. It definitely is over in some ways. And just like in the book, that is sort of the end of it for a little while.
Right.
As it should be to a certain extent. But of course, as a book reader, I just know that in the future it gets picked back up and we get so much more and I fucking love it. And if I didn't have the books, I'd be just like a little bit disappointed. But now I'm just like, oh, God, yes.
You know, and what gets you pumped up about it is what little we got of Loghain. The actor was so freaking phenomenal that the stuff we know is coming just gives you so shivers. Insane.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, I can't wait. Right?
Agreed.
Oh my God. Super stoked. I love Loghain.
So now, Daniel, you got to answer your own question.
Yeah.
Okay. So mine actually has to do with Suwan and Moraine. I am not an LGBTQ human. I am a cisgendered white male, and I know that about myself. That being said, I think that the Suwan and Gareth Bryn relationship later on is cool. I do. I also think that the Moraine and Tom relationship later on is also cool. I don't want to diminish either of those relationships later on in the story. However, two really good reasons I think that change was good is, number one, strict representation. I absolutely love that is in the show and that is a big part of the show and that no one really questions it. I mean, they would, because it's an Amyrlin and an Aes Sedai, but not because it's two women.
Yeah.
Nobody questions the warders. Nobody would question this relationship. It just is a thing that happens in this world, which is awesome. And number two, I think that it actually really springboards off of their story from New Spring incredibly well, which, granted, again, I know that television show watchers don't have that. They don't know about that yet. They will someday, presumably, but they don't know about it yet. But as book readers, I think that there was so much more to Moraine and Suwan and the things that they had to deal with when they were younger in the tower and the things that they went through. And if I'm being completely honest, the trauma that they shared early on in their life that actually lends itself incredibly well to this relationship that ends up in the show. And whether it actually ends up being a thing into the future that snuffs out in some ways the other relationships that the two characters end up in, or whether it's just a foundation by which they talk about who they are and what they do and why some of these other connections to these other people are so strong. Either way, I actually think it's a great addition to the story at this moment in the story.
Well, that's what it does. It takes and it pulls their story from New Spring and brings it into the main, if you want to say that, storyline in a very believable and justifiable and good way.
Yep.
It's fantastic. I don't know too many people that, if you enjoyed no other part about the whole thing, that didn't enjoy the whole, you know, kneel, you know, on your knees, Moraine Sedai, followed by on your knees.
Yeah.
I mean,
that actually led enjoyable. That led to some crazy speculation from some of our viewers that, and on Twitter actually, that they thought that Moraine and Suwan might have had some kind of seafolk wedding or something. And we were like, wait, what? And they were like, well, yeah, because
shit, that's so
because
cool.
In public, the Amaryllis is telling her to kneel, but in private, she's telling the Amaryllis to kneel. And it kind of makes sense. I think she was.
I don't think it's. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's.
I agree with that. But.
But it was kind of cool, that they went there. The other thing was they normalized the whole LGBTQ thing.
Yes.
In episode 3, when Dana was telling, you and him are together, goes, no. If I was, I could find something better. Normalize the shit out of that with one sentence.
Yes.
No, like, it was really done. Did. Yeah, it was done.
I mean, and that's one of the things I love they've done throughout the entire season is they've captured what at least I've always read into to be a kind of core, or not a core fundamental, but an aspect of the world Robert Jordan built.
Yeah.
Where these relationships aren't uncommon. These relationships aren't seen as, anything negative or scandalous like they have been in the past in our world. And among some people, of course, still today, but
Of course.
Fuck them, whatever. but it shows like what I always read into the series, that the world has progressed to a point where they're not focused like our world can be on things like, race or things like sexual orientation or, any of these kind of things that are fundamentally, aspects of people's personal lives. So
it's like, and one thing that I actually want to mention real quick is to those people out there who have always had a little bit of a problem with the fact that it is very light in the books. You're not wrong. I think that you are actually valid in recognizing that there is not a lot of page time for Pillow Friends. There is not a lot of page time for a lot of these different relationships. And I agree with you.
It was there though. It was prevalent. I mean,
that's the thing. If
every time they said Pillow Friends, I don't want to
tell you that it was there because I get that it's not necessarily something that I am familiar enough with.
Yeah, it was there. He just Robert Jordan. I mean, I love the books. Sucked at relationship writing, and so therefore, I don't think he wanted to write that because he didn't really know about it. I'm not sure.
And I also want to throw out there that, again, I don't want to hand wave and say, but the books were also written in the 90s. That is a truth. That is absolutely a bit of an explanation for one of multiple reasons that Robert Jordan didn't necessarily write a whole lot of sex or a whole lot of relationship that gets down to the intimate or a whole lot of different things on the page. This was a different time. Now, again, I don't want to just say, this was a different time. You have to be fine with that. You don't need to be fine with that. But I do also want to say I've always very much appreciated that it was very, is in the books.
It was very advanced always writing for the time as far as,
there's a big difference between understanding the circumstances that a novel was written and how things are different now, and acknowledging that, maybe in the 80s and 90s, this was very progressive, but for current time, if it was written now, it wouldn't go far enough or it wouldn't do enough.
Yeah, exactly.
Representation.
It would fall short, yes.
So and long again, as you I acknowledge really want... that necessary distinction, I think you're fine. It's when you look at it and you're like, you didn't go far enough in the 80s. You can't apply modern morality to a historical writing in terms of whether or not the author did enough or not.
Well, and I really, really want to focus just for a moment on the fact that you can disagree with Robert Jordan and the fact that he didn't go far enough in the 80s or the 90s or whatever, all you want. That's fine. I'm not telling you you're wrong. I am saying I disagree and I understand him, but I don't, I'm not telling you you are incorrect. But I do also want to throw out there, Robert Jordan is the one who set up all of the stuff in the books that we now see on screen that I, for one, am super excited about. That all of us are sitting here being like, that was awesome. I'm great. I'm glad that they're normalizing it. If it hadn't been in the books at all, I'm not saying that they couldn't have changed it for the show, but they didn't need to. it was already there. And I appreciate the fuck out of that. And I do hope that even if you felt like in the books that you weren't represented enough, and that you as a person and your sexuality or your identifiers or anything like that weren't as represented as you wanted them in the books, I can feel that and I can understand that. I am glad that it's there in the show, and I do hope that it is there for you in the show. If it's not, again, you're not invalid. I just disagree with you.
Can I add something to that?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so this is the way I look at it. Regardless of where we're at today and how you identify today, or you know, whatever, you still fell in love with the books the way that they were written.
Also true.
Period. You fell in love with the books the way they were written. In your head, right? As however you identify, in your head, if you saw certain characters, or if you read more into some characters than others, and relationships and others, and you know, maybe you imagined relationships, or you said, oh, this would be great. You know, you started shipping people differently. That's great. You know, that's great.
Matt and Tomanes.
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, exactly. It's not the way it was written. And you were perfectly fine with the way it was written because you love the books, and you're still, you know, watching the show. Now, I am a purist to an extent. Sure. And that is, I love the books. Leave the books the way they are. You want to do a show, it's an adaptation. Fine. But when you start getting into things like, oh, we're gonna change this character from male to female, or we're gonna change this that starts bugging me a little bit. There has to be context, right? So, for example, breaking into Marvel real quick, the change of Captain America from Steve Rogers to Sam Wilson, perfectly fine. Why? It's a mantle that was being passed over. Mm-hmm. Thor, Jane becoming the new Thor. Again, a mantle that is being pushed over. But if you're all of a sudden going to be like this well-established character from literature that's had 50, 60 years, whatever, you know, 20 years, and all of a sudden you just want to make them a woman, or you want to make them this, that, or the other for no reason whatsoever, just to placate the masses, that bugs me.
No, I agree with that. Please have a reason, or at the very least, make one that makes sense. No, I completely agree. Yeah.
And I think that's completely fair. And I really like the point that you made earlier about, and I know we've said it time and time again, there is somebody for everybody to resonate with within the Wheel of Time. And I couldn't agree more. If you read more into Matt and Ran on the road to Camelin in the books than I did, that's fine. I saw battle buddies struggling to stay alive, taking shelter together, looking out for each other. If you saw something more romantic to it, that's fine. At the end of the day, you enjoyed the books. I enjoyed the books. We're talking about the books, and it makes a lot of fun discussion for the books overall. I do love that they are bringing stuff that Robert Jordan definitely included in the series more to the forefront, making it more blatant, more obvious, more included, and giving it more screen time than it got, you know, page time. I think that's fantastic. So, in doubt on that, you know, very blatantly just said, I definitely support it. I think it's fantastic. And I enjoyed every last bit of it. I mean, please, I can't wait to sit there and look at somebody, you know, that I'm romantic with in the future and be like, on your knees. Just they have to be a show fan just so they get the joke.
Oh, of course.
Or in Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have to pay for that, but whatever.
All right. All right. Before we go further into that.
But I have a question since.
Excellent.
You asked a question.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So we've asked what did you enjoy most? What was the change you enjoyed most? We have to do the opposite point. Yep.
I was going to ask that question next.
I kind of figured. What was the change you liked the least? And Daniel,
and you can't do the Trollocs. You can't do. You're not allowed to do the Trollocs of season 8. No, I'm just kidding. episode 8.
No. But Daniel, I'm gonna get you. We're gonna get you to go first this time.
Yeah. So I'm gonna say that the change I liked the least from book to screen was actually The Ways. I mean, there were parts of it that I definitely understood, and there were parts of it that I definitely liked. But, and again, I do want to say I understand and accept why it needed to be so fast, why it needed to happen so quickly. They couldn't spend nearly as much time in The Ways as they did in the books. But I definitely had a little bit of a problem with the fact that overall, I wasn't as scared of The Ways in the show as I was of the books. And not just I wasn't as scared, like it was a huge drop off between how much I was scared of The Ways in the books and how much I was scared of The Ways in the television show. It felt so much less foreboding and so much more dealable in the show than it did in the books, especially because they end up spending like a small number of hours there, seemingly, rather than multiple days. And again, I liked parts of it. I really did. I think they did a number of parts very well, but boy, did I not get nearly as much fear from The Ways as I felt really kind of needed to be there for them to be so hesitant to go into The Ways.
I agree with you. One, this isn't my answer to the question, but I do agree with you. And it, to me, it was something I think that would have helped make it more foreboding, right?
Yeah.
Was to lower the edges on the sides of the pathways.
Oh yeah.
Because
that already would have started. Yeah.
I was like, they're just walking down a thing with railings.
Basically. You know?
Granted, yeah. I see what they had to do because The Ways was in the books was just blackness. So there's no visual anything there. So I get yes. what that, you know, the decision they made.
And I never actually thought again that we yeah. were going to get exactly The Ways from the yeah. book. I think that was just too much to put into a television show as far as the constraints
yeah.
of actual human media on television just doesn't quite get right. to the level of your imagination that Robert Jordan describes The Ways as. But again, it was just so far.
It was
off.
Too safe. It was too safe.
It was too safe.
Yeah. yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, Tavern. What was your least enjoyed change?
I was hoping you would forget me. I have two, actually.
Oh, is that why right. the microphone is red? It's the red stoplight? Like, hey, no, stop. Don't ask
yeah,
this.
Yeah, no. Listen, the people on my stream think it's a heater. I don't know why, but whatever.
It looks like a heater. It really does.
Sometimes that's fuck great. With them, I kind of go. I actually have two.
Beautiful. Let's go.
Anybody who knows me knows that I have an issue with L'Oreal. Like a fucking huge issue with L'Oreal on many different levels. Somebody pointed one of the things out. L'Oreal is slow. That line alone, my heart died a little bit when he said, aww. Oh, we're not known for our speed. I was like, what? I fucking lost my shit for a second.
Oh, I thought they meant the drug, not like their actual speed.
No, right.
Oh, I thought they meant their talking.
They were talking about, she said, no, Moraine and Lan are gone. We're not known for our speed. And I was like, oh my God, fucking shoot me now. That was one. That, so the whole, everybody knows I have a thing about the Ogier in general. The freaking ears, I'm pissed off about the ears. I'm pissed off about the eyebrows that dangle to the cheeks. I mean, fuck, they could have done that. The fact that the one thing after seeing the Trollocs, and I said this before, the Trollocs in episode one were my bar for where they were going to go with L'Oreal.
And L'Oreal didn't hit it.
No, and I was like, the last thing I want is another freaking Hagrid. And what do we get? Barista Hagrid. That's what we got. That's how I look at it. We got Barista Hagrid. You want a venti or whatever? It pissed me off.
Oh my God.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, I love the actor.
It's so shady, but it's so accurate. Oh God.
Yeah. I love the actor. I love the way he's portraying
yes.
L'Oreal, but the freaking effects team screwed that up. Number two, and he's not tall. That was the other one that pissed me off.
I didn't like his practical effects either. Like, where you actually see his hands, I'm like, how does he
grab things?
How does he move his fingers? Like,
yeah.
Well, and
it just looks like they just pound it like a pound of clay on each finger and molded it. I mean,
really quick, I do want to say that overall, the statement that Rafe made, that was the thing about they wanted to make Loial more practical, because if they used all of their CGI budget on Loial, it would have been a problem. I agree with that statement completely. Yeah. I do. I 100%.
No, Rafe, I know why they did it. I know why they did it.
100% with you on that. However, I also could not agree more with Tavern's statements and the fact that I recognize I have been in practical effects makeup before. I have spent hours getting into practical effect makeup. I get how tedious and how problematic and how utterly horrific it is to design and to be in and to spend a ton of time in. I get that. I do.
Well, we spent hours in MOP gear. All right. Take that.
Please don't hear that as someone who doesn't understand. Oh, what do you mean you couldn't make the practical effects better? Like, they're so easy. They're not. They're really hard. That being said, even as someone who has been there before, what? I didn't hate Loial, but he didn't hit the bar I needed.
He didn't. I
do agree with Tavern super hard that he didn't.
Hit the mark. I understand why they made the decisions they made. For example, when he says we're not known for our speed, that was their way of covering up for the fact that the actor is wearing these giant ass shoes and they can't get him to run in that. Right. Yeah. So I get it. All right. So number two, my second thing is the Perrin storyline and the way they're doing his whole Wolf brother thing is very is very Teen Wolf to me. It's super Teen Wolf to me. Like, they start off with a wolf licked my leg. Oh wait, we met the Tinkers, but I heard them coming before Egwene heard them coming. Oh, you know this, and then they get into the goddamn ways. Or he goes glowy eyed, right? It was like flicker flicker, right? Because his eyes never hit gold for long. They're like, it's like he was getting short circuited or some shit. They made him look like a dog. They had the muzzle on him. You know, they were cutting into him. Then he finally breaks loose, or Egwene gets him loose, and then the muzzle lands around his neck and it looks like a collar, right? And then in the ways, he's like, "There's something up ahead," and we're like, "Oh shit, what is it?" It's a fucking rock.
Yeah,
it's a scratch rock. Yeah. That's what he saw in the dark. And I'm like, seriously? So
okay, I do want to throw out there was also a Trolloc around that point. So I'm not saying
it was
that
behind him.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
it was in front of them.
No, the
because they
was
get
him
to that rock and then it attacks them.
Yeah, but they only walk 10 feet to that rock.
Okay, but I am saying, I don't want a hand wave and I don't want to totally disagree with you, but I will also say more in the ways at that point
rock. I will
even though I'm pretty sure he just saw the
he only addressed the rock.
I'm pretty fucking sure.
If you see something not moving and then you see a familiar Trolloc thing and you're like, there's something, and people are like, oh, a rock, and you're like, no, that, and you point to the Trolloc.
Yeah.
Fine, fair point. But he's like,
no, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Something large blocks our path. It's not just a rock.
Yeah. It was like the direction man ever, you know? And then the rock is just sitting there going, it's only a scratch. Anyways. But yeah, so the whole thing to me, it seemed, and I was like, God, I hope they're not going with this trope, because it would be it would be detrimental to the story as a whole. But it almost felt like a Lupin trope or a werewolf trope, where they were making him look like he was a werewolf. And I was like, that's completely the opposite of what we want with Perrin, right?
Yeah.
So I'm hoping in season two, and I think in season two, we're going to get more Perrin and he'll have a lot more to go. I get that they couldn't follow every single storyline in season one.
Yes.
So I completely understand
that. However.
But man, they made him look like a... what's my buddy's favorite movie? Police Wolf, or what the hell's that damn movie? Oh,
God, what?
Yeah, Wolf Cop.
I hate
Cop.
It
Wolf
already.
Cop.
I
yeah,
hate
Wolf Cop.
This he already.
Like, he, oh, my God. I puke every time he says it. Like, in my mouth, just a little bit. I refuse to even look at the damn movie. But he loves it. But, yeah, that's what I was getting. I was getting Werewolf vibes. So those are the two things. Loyal, just the overall sense of O'Gear. I wouldn't even say Loyal, just O'Gear in general.
Somehow and, got Aaron and what, to do less than he did in the books.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to throw out there, I actually kind of appreciated Perrin's stretched storyline as far as what he does. But I agree with Tavern that I didn't appreciate the lengthening of his story about what happens to him. Because it actually happens pretty quickly in the books, as far as from meeting Elias, who again isn't in the show, which we'll see whether he ends up showing up at some point or doesn't. But when he, from meeting Elias to becoming like a pretty fucking legit, like I call wolves to me wolf brother, is yeah. like pretty short, and his eyes turn yellow between X and Y like pretty quickly. So yeah. I actually agree that the wolf brother thing is taking way too long. I think that it's uncouth as far as how long it's taking in the show. Though I do actually appreciate that Perrin's storyline as a whole, the rest of it, the non-Wolf Brother segments are so actually taking longer.
So the Layla part and all stretched. Of that stuff?
I mean, that was well, less the Layla 50 part minutes.
All the way to the, I picked up the axe, but I'm still not even sure I want to use it. Both yeah. in the fact that there are two fades in this room, and also because I'm still not sure about violence thing. I like that stretch. Him just going from, no, actually, I was with the Tinkers, and while I disagree with them and was playing devil's advocate to them, and you know, my town got attacked and things like that, so I feel it in my bones, to... No, I'm murdering things. I'm just fucking murdering the shit yeah. out of stuff is really quick in yeah. the books.
Oh, it is. And it's, I had a little bit more problem with Perrin. One, I was okay with the change where the, you know, the trauma of killing Layla. And,
oh,
you know,
I love that.
In that whole battle, in that
such
battle,
a better way to go ahead and yeah. communicate him than
yeah,
the,
yeah. because
you
in
know,
the battle,
through the medium. Yeah.
In the fight in the forge, he had the axe, she had the hammer. And yep. there right there was your conflict, right?
Yep.
And then he kills her with the axe. And so he's already going through this every episode. Like almost every episode, one of his companions mentions Layla in some way or another, which is just yep. another freaking foot in the freaking balls, right?
Yep.
And he's just going further and further down.
Yep.
And
Andrew
he was
hated
right.
that change.
Yeah, he was right for picking.
No,
he was
I
right
don't.
For picking for the recruitment for the Way of the Leaf.
Oh, 100%.
Right
yeah.
for picking. And so yeah. that's why I brought the recruitment stuff up earlier, because
yep.
we, in the books, we just see them like
yeah.
Oh, often. Aes Sedai, I'm an Aes Sedai. I want to go, you know, or yeah. you see them just change faction or just grab onto something and go with it. Here Kinda. We're actively seeing the characters being pulled in to different mentalities and different ideologies and stuff. And it's amazing. I mean, you see it with Egwene, you see it with Perrin.
Yeah.
Rand is, I hate to say this because, you know, when you guys invited me to come out here to talk about changes.
You be careful. You be careful with my boy Rand. You be careful.
I was
going
to say.
Keep going, but be careful.
When you guys invited me to talk about changes, I was like, well, we're going to talk about episodes 1 and 2 because they're the closest to the books. After that, everything was a change, pretty much. I mean, from 3 to 8, everything changed. Rand is the truest to the books
he
so
is.
Far. Him and Nynaeve.
He absolutely is.
He fucking hates the Aes Sedai, still doesn't trust him. Doesn't want to listen to anybody.
Oh, I have a sound effect for that.
Oh,
no!
Go for it.
No!
But yeah, I mean, and everybody's like, oh, he's the most boring character. Like all my non-book friends, he's the most boring character on the show.
In book one, that's true. Like,
but that's what we're going with right now, right?
No,
it's book
I know.
One,
yeah.
Episode season one,
exactly.
book one, right?
Yeah.
So most of my friends figured out who the Dragon Reborn was by the fact that he didn't have anything to do. Everybody else had these special shit.
Thank you. I've been saying it was like episode three.
Yeah.
Dude, a non-book reader who I work with, who's one of my managers, I told him about this podcast sort of in passing because of, you know, scheduling reasons. And I was like, I need Tuesdays off because I do this podcast.
And,
he was like,
now more shotties here every night.
Yeah, right. no, but he, after episode two, maybe three, definitely super early in the series.
Yeah.
Not after episode one, but after, or no, because the first three came out all at the same time. So after episode three, he came to me at some point and was like, okay, so I don't actually want you to answer this question, but who's the Dragon Reborn and is it Rand? And I was like, do you want me to answer that question? And he was like, no, I don't want you to answer that question. Is it Matt? And I was like, yes, at least you're also still questioning it. And I was like, fuck yeah.
I will
but his
say that
first choice was the correct choice. Like,
they tried to go so far opposite of how the books do of making, like the books make everything. I mean, it's Rand's point of view. Everything is so obviously Rand that you're like, really it has to be Rand. Basically. And the show goes the opposite way. And it's like, well, here's everybody else.
Yep.
And I'm like,
and Rand.
So for the inverse reason, you're showing everybody it's Rand.
Yeah,
basically.
And like I had never readers like the anime game shop that I go and play D&D and stuff at. Like the owner, well, he's also an other owner, but the main owner's husband was like, oh, I think Perrin is going to be the Dragon Reborn and Nynaeve is going to be one of his warders. And I'm like,
oh, shit.
Interesting.
I'm not saying that he just wrote a better story.
No, buy that guy a cape.
I mean, it actually gives Perrin something to do. So
yeah.
No, that's true. All right. But, we've gotten way off track at this point, which again, great discussion. And that's Black Tower like to a T. But I do actually also very much want to hear Andrew's answer to this story. Because I am
probably
fairly
already know.
Certain we've talked about stuff like this a lot, but I actually think I'm going to be a little bit surprised. So Andrew, please give at least the fans, if not your co-host or one of your two co-hosts, I should say, the answer to the question so that we can talk a little bit about everybody's rather than just mine and Tavern's.
I don't think you're going to be surprised because I don't think it's necessarily surprising that 90% of the issues I have with season one come from episode 8.
Oh yeah, okay. Fair enough.
I mean, I do have other issues, like, you know, I don't think the Lila Ibarra change pays off enough to rationalize it being a change.
Fair enough.
But that's,
yeah, he stayed on the same path, right?
Yeah.
But I'm also a big fan of like his original path.
Fair enough.
And if they were gonna like, hey, we're not gonna tell you who the Dragon Reborn is by just ignoring essentially who the Dragon Reborn is, it could have been paid off a lot better by also having somebody else who doesn't really have anything going on.
Right.
Anyway, my least favorite change is the absolute blue balling of Tarwyn's Gap. this was the Dragon Reborn's power statement. This was the Dragon Reborn showing to the reader, to the viewer, to everybody why the Dragon Reborn is such a thing to be hailed and feared. How powerful the Dragon Reborn is.
Yeah.
And instead, we got lackluster CGI Trollocs and a change to how Lincoln
works. I said
you
weren't allowed to choose that.
No, I can do whatever.
Well, we already talked about that. So
well, he didn't choose that. He didn't choose that.
No,
that
I
was
know,
just.
I know.
That
I know.
Was
it's
just,
something hard about it. Yeah.
there are like elements here and there about the way Tarwyn's Gap and the kind of like wrapping up of the Eye of the World that I do kind of like. I like the change to the way linking works. I like that it adds an element of, no, there is no governor, at least on this method of linking that Amelisa does. You know, you can kill the people that are just trying to help you. You know, you can overpull a charge from a battery and it explodes.
Yes.
But
do you have a Galaxy S8?
That was the S7 that was detonating.
Was it? Okay.
And that was only with third-party chargers. Which everybody used because Samsung never provided a sufficiently long charging cable.
You're not wrong.
But at least it still didn't break after 3 days like all of Apple's. Anyway. But I'm also in the camp of people. Like I've heard a lot of people that
go ahead and sponsor the Black Tower podcast. Or not.
Yeah.
You don't give a
Fuck.
Yes. You don't have to pay me money to not use your product. But no, like, I'm also in the camp of people that, yes, I reread it a couple times, but I didn't find the book ending to The Eye of the World all that confusing. And that's one of the big things I've heard as people have talked about the season finale and everything. They're like, oh, it's still a little confusing, but it's not as confusing as the ending in the book. And I'm like, it just wasn't that confusing to me. Like, the perspective changed quickly because it was meant to convey this whole, like, fast-paced thing. All these things are happening
like a Robert simultaneously.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it took a reread or two to do it, but I didn't find it all that confusing. I thought that what everything was very sufficient for the payoff you got in the books. And I very much enjoyed that more than what we saw in the show.
It's fair.
Like, I don't hate that the Horn of Valyr's chest that hopefully has the Banner of the Dragon in the chest with it, so they keep that part, was under Algamar's throne. I think it makes almost as much sense as where everything is in the book. Not necessarily as much, but almost as much.
I have a theory on that.
God, the number of people that absolutely fucking hated that part was so high, and I love it.
But also the number of people that loved everything about, like, or a ton about, like, episode 8. Like, I was kind of with Rafe on that one where I was surprised.
No, it was also funny. Okay, so
like the battle strategy of putting your artillery pieces out in front of your fortification wall makes no sense.
It doesn't. But we already talked about that a little bit, though, because the city itself was compromised, and they knew that. But anyway,
yeah.
Moving on from that.
There's no bearing on their fortification.
That's not actually important. I do want to mention, same guy who actually asked me the question of who was the dragon and thought it was Rand. That same guy. I was out of work for a couple of weeks, and the day I came back, he was like, hey, so last time we talked, you hadn't seen the last episode. Have you watched it now? And I was like, yeah, I thought it was great. And he was like, dude, it's the first episode where I really fully felt like this show is going somewhere and it's all happening. And I was like, say that again. And yeah, let me record it so that I can show Andrew. And
what a shame.
I'm just kidding.
It's got the weirdest choppy cut from scene to scene. It's got the most lackluster thing. Like, oh, okay. Like, instead of like Rand's actual realization and come to Jesus moment of I am the dragon and I can channel, I can use all these powers. Instead, he just gets a Gwaine's accepted test.
Yeah, basically.
At the end, the biggest payoff is...
Hey, that's Rand's accepted test now. How dare you?
The biggest payoff is you get tricked into freeing the Forsaken from the prison.
So, I liked episode 8.
I felt blue balled. I still enjoyed the episode, but I felt blue balled.
No, I know. I agree with you.
There were things that bothered me. Yeah.
Yeah.
There were things that bothered me, but... So... Like I mentioned earlier, the Loial thing is it makes my eye twitch. and so after that episode, I want to say episode 6, I had to come to terms and say, you know what? Listen, I have to remove myself because we are at the point now where the core of the books is in the story.
Yes.
But we're getting to it from a completely new and interesting perspective, right?
Yeah.
So I stopped for episode 7 and 8. I didn't compare books to, books to show at all. I just watched it as I would watch a show, right? Any other show.
Yep.
Was I disappointed in a few things? Yes. The Trollocs, which we're not allowed to bring up apparently. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you are.
There are no Trollocs in Tarwin's Gap.
Yeah. I will say the fortifications. Okay. The city of Faldara itself.
We're not talking about that. It doesn't make any fucking sense. 0% of it makes sense.
The city itself from the shots that we got from the promo stills is actually pretty smart. It's up right on a precipice. You have to come all the way around it to get to the main gate. So it's sound, right?
Faldara itself makes sense.
Yeah, Faldara makes sense. The fucking wall at Tarwin's Gap makes no sense. I was like, okay, that didn't, I don't get it.
If it was actually, if it was the greatest wall, the best wall in the history of Randland,
yeah,
then it would make sense.
Yeah, no, like, it's about as effective as the border wall. Yeah.
The biggest thing, the biggest thing I don't get is why you take and put your artillery pieces in front of your forward. Like, and that is a fob wall. That is a blocking off the gap.
Yeah, and why would you take all your forces there and leave auxiliary forces to defend the city? Or actually, he was planning on the city to fall.
Yeah.
He was planning
That is, again, I don't want a hand wave. Anyone who's in the military is like, what kind of fucking idiot does this? Because you're right. You're absolutely correct. Agobar is not a genius in this moment in the fact that he has already resigned himself.
A lot of people in the military that like to the fact all about tech.
Yeah. That the Faldarin city is going to fall. He is going from the premise that he is doing as much stopgap stuff as he can tactically.
Let me he references like somebody
going ahead and saving Faldara at all.
Well, he references like somebody cut the ropes to the drawbridge, and I'm like,
you are
a full-on fortified military city with centuries of experience.
You can't put more ropes. That's my first.
You can't retie the ropes. You don't have another way to get rid of the drawbridge. Like, no
flaming. That was a line about he knows that it's compromised, not about the actual way in which it was compromised, Andrew.
No, they actually talk about it's like somebody cut the ropes. There's dark.
I agree with your statement.
He knows exactly how it's compromised.
The problem of and has the no fact fallback. That the city is compromised, not the specific way in which
it's like every second lieutenant that just passed like combat tactics 101.
Every second lieutenant, I love that.
But but again, it is definitely very much Agilmar not realizing that Amelisa is going to be able to do this. If he knew that Amelisa had Nynaeve and Egwene to pull from, she would have been on top of the wall at Tarwyn's Gap in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
No idea of the tools at his disposal in some ways. And he is absolutely going from the premise that whatever he does is just to kill as many Trollocs as possible before he knows that his city is toast.
But yeah, we both talked over you. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, you're fine. Somebody made a good comment. You know, Agilmar at the lower level crossbow window makes no fucking sense either. But
doesn't.
So here's the thing with Amelisa, right? Because we had a discussion about this on Twitter and a couple other places. That when we saw the linking in the Loghain episode, those were full-blown Aes Sedai in complete and utter control of what they were doing because they were trained. When we see the linking at Tarwyn's Gap, that is barely an accepted. Somebody who probably got a ring because she was, you know, she had a spark and she was part of the royal, you know, family or whatever.
They even talk about it.
Yeah,
so she was just enough to be accepted, but not even fucking close to being an Aes Sedai. Yeah.
So chances are she was taught how to link, but not how to control that. Yep. Then you have two randos. And the one thing I loved about the channeling in that episode, you could see the power of the source coming into each person and how much power they had, which I thought
was pittance. The two on Amelisa's left.
It was like nothing. And so now you have this barely an accepted trying to control all of this power that she never thought she could hold because of Egwene and Nynaeve.
And her half-assed fucking link.
Yeah. So people were like, somebody was like, well, can't the people in the back do anything but just stand there? And I'm like, they're not trained. Even in the books, when they linked, it was the one person that was channeling, right? And everybody else was basically eyes and ears. They were spotters. Yes, they could have a dagger in their hand. They could have, you know, something to protect themselves with. But for the most part, they were giving themselves up. Matter of fact.
And of course, to be fair, in the books, there is the buffer. So giving over control to someone doesn't have that effect because they can't kill you.
Right.
But at the same time, in the show, whether it's a specific change or whether they've just added an aspect of it or whatever it is that you want to say, this is now a much more dangerous Link. This is a much more dangerous thing that they've gone at and done, where not only are you now just eyes and ears, but you got to really hope that the person like in controlling this half-assed Link
so here's isn't
going to go ape shit on everybody. But yes, sorry.
Here's a theory, and I'm only going to try to say it now because I know if I don't, I'm going to forget.
You're good.
Whenever Moraine is telling Rand about the Angreal, it's called being a Sol Angreal.
Yeah.
But and she says, you know, the strongest male Chandlers poured all their strength into it. It could be a way to hearken into what I think, because I think Amit Lisa essentially uses the four other female Chandlers as Angreal. Yeah. It's an imperfect Link where it looks like she's not fully using the Link like we see everybody.
I don't think she was trained. Countering
look. So it could be that, like, instead of it being a true Link, it's more like surrogate Angreal.
Well, and okay. I really want to throw out there that I didn't notice it in the episode, and Andrew actually even brought my attention to it, because I'm sure if I had watched them a little bit more closely, I might have gone ahead and grabbed it, but Andrew was the one who 100% caught it and brought it to my attention. Is you have the scene with the sisters in Loghain, and all of them volunteer with a hand motion and a, you know, representation of Sidar coming around themselves and out into the Link that Leandrin makes. The Faldara scene, Amelisa says that she's gonna put Sidar into them in some ways, and they need to accept it. And then she sends out this tendril of Sidar and basically like fucking catches all of them by surprise and like catches their breath and whatever. So it is a really distinctly different Link from the two, being even represented on screen, not just by some wording or some whatever. It's super different in the representation in every way. And I loved that shit.
Yeah, there was cool. The Loghain bit, and I know exactly what he's talking about, because their moves that they did was like supplication. Like they were like they were being held, they were being subdued, not really subdued, but basically they were being
submissive to some extent, like that's a submissive tie.
Yeah,
BDSM community shout out there.
Yeah, so they were being very submissive. If you go back to the part where Leandrin throws Moraine under the bus in front of the Emerlin, and Swan's like on your knees and your face to the ground, Moraine does the exact same supplication move and then drops. So she's very submissive, and so I noticed that. And you're absolutely right. When we get to Tarwyn's Gap, it was so weird. There are so many weird things when it comes to channeling and the one power in the show than from the books, you know?
I agree.
For example, Moraine says, well, teach me. She goes, I can't because you'll go mad or whatever. That doesn't make any sense. There's another time where Moraine walks into the cave with Loghain, and Leandrin and Alana are sitting there guarding him. And she asks, can he hear us? Wouldn't you be able to see the weaves that he's got air plugs in his ears? I mean, granted, somebody said they might be very small and inside and you can't really see them. But if you can see channeling, you should be able to see something, right?
Yeah.
Because in the books, you could see it. And I granted, like I said, there's some weird changes.
They made the change to Chandlers too, right? Because Moraine's like, I didn't know. And they're like, how did you not know? She's like, well, she wasn't actively channeling. How was I supposed to know? And we're like,
that is definitely a difference between, I walk into a room and I can tell you every fucking person who can maybe even a little bit channel
and what strength they are.
They actually have to channel around me before I know what's up. Yeah. Yeah. So there are a lot of lore changes between the books and the show that we don't even really have time to get into.
No.
But
I am glad that we have gotten a chance to talk about our favorites and our least favorites.
Were you done with your thought there, Tavern?
Oh, sorry, yes.
Tavern?
Oh, on episode 8? No, I'm good. I mean, the last thing I want to say about episode 8 was, yes, it was a huge change. Again, I was looking at it from a non-book perspective because I said I had to separate myself. And I thought it was very interesting that in both cases of Loghain at the mid-season and at the end of the season, there were these big battles happening outside, but the real battle were just conversations.
Oh,
it was just two people talking, right? Which I thought was
Are you talking really about cool. Tarmin Guided? Oh, wait.
Yeah. So basically, I mean, it's the same thing. It's weird. There's one other last thing I want to bring up, and it has nothing to do with the questions.
No.
And I want to get your all's opinion on this. And now, damn it, I wish I could remember what it was. We were talking about episode 8.
Oh, fuck.
Shitballs. All right, you guys keep talking, and if I remember, I'll let you know.
Damn it. Okay, well, if you do think of it, please pop in. But I was thinking it is getting a little late.
Okay.
But, you know, here at the... We have been super, super, super... I mean, like, again, I don't say this about every guest. I do think about it a lot of guests, but I don't say it about every guest.
That I'm sexy? Oh, sorry.
Oh, extremely. Yes. But that you added so much to this discussion, and I've really appreciated you coming on and you taking the time to go ahead and talk to us and with us. Yikes, English. Especially for as long as you have been willing to go ahead and be on the episode. But I think that is a reasonable time for us to go ahead and wrap this up. We have asked a lot of different questions. I think that we've dived into a lot of different stuff, which is like absolutely what
three
we
or four
here.
And everything else is just,
I know, right?
It's chaos.
And all that still being said, like, if you definitely remember the question, please ask us.
Yes, yeah, I'll think about it. I'll send it to you guys in a message or something.
Oh yeah, no, 100%. And you know, if you are willing and or able, we may throw it up onto like a discussion or whatever, just to get other people's opinions on it, and or just, you know, hey, here's what we think, and we didn't quite get it to it in the episode or whatever. But yeah, so thank you all very, very much for listening. You've all been awesome. If you think of a change that is your favorite, your least favorite, the ones that you think worked the best, the ones that you think worked the worst, as far as book to television, please let us know in the comments below, whether that's on YouTube, where a lot of people are probably watching this, or on Podbean, where a lot of people are listening to this, or anywhere that you're listening or watching at all. Please let us know. We absolutely want to hear your thoughts on the gamut of what we've talked about tonight.
And if you're listening to this, wherever you are listening to it, if you wouldn't mind taking the time, please do leave a rating, leave a review, leave a comment, that kind of stuff. It definitely does help us out so that other people can find the show as well. If you're watching us on YouTube, please do like, please do subscribe, leave comments. If your comment is nothing more than, my least favorite change was everything and my favorite change was nothing.
I couldn't get in touch with Perrin because he's not white. That kind of bullshit.
Oh. You know? We definitely do address that. We have a channel or two in our Discord that we love to post those kind of comments in.
Oh, yeah.
And we definitely appreciate your hateful addition to our YouTube algorithm analytics. So
appreciate is such a strong word.
I appreciate it from an analytics standpoint.
Yeah,
I don't appreciate your actual like opinion on that, because I've only met one person that brought any semblance of a logical discussion or a logical argument to it. Right. And I still was like, yes, but...
Yes,
racist.
Yes, but racism. Yes,
yeah. You know, like,
does it feel to be a Nazi? What?
Just because you can put a bunch of logic into like a racist argument doesn't mean
it's not.
Yeah,
you can put makeup on a pig, but it's still a pig.
You guys got rated five cow teats.
Yes, five cow teats. I don't know how many cow teats, but
it seems like a mutation.
I want to
five
say there's
is
four.
Solid.
Yeah. That's what I was like. That's what I was like. It sounds like a mutation, but I'll take it.
Again, I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe someone can.
It is generally four. Generally, cows have four teats.
Unless they're a bull cow.
Yeah, then they have one.
Then they have one.
Yeah. And that takes a lot more work to get milk out of.
You don't get clear or nearly as much. Yeah. Definitely don't. No.
Very small, much smaller payoff for a lot more work.
Indeed. But again, guys, thank you so much for listening. Taviran Tavern, thank you so much for being here with us on the episode. You've been a fantastic guest, and you've had some amazing things to say, which has been super helpful for us to go off on ridiculous tangents and all of that good stuff. So before we go, please let the people know again here at the end of the episode where they can find all of your things and where they can expect to see you, you know, in the near future and all of that stuff.
All right. So I'm on TikTok, Twitter, of course, Instagram. I have a merch store where I do designs. You can get anything from scarves to shirts to mugs to caps, shower curtains, computer mats, on Redbubble. Just search for Taviran Tavern, Taviran _ Tavern on Redbubble. And my parting thought for you guys, season two, if we get to season two or when we get to season two.
When we get to season two.
Kalindor will be relocated to Ruidan.
I don't hate it.
That's what I'm throwing out there.
I hate it.
I know. I'm just saying we had a whole discussion and I don't know where they're going to end up in two because they need to be in Falme, but they also need to hit the Stone of Tyr. And I think Rand's heading for the Ale Waste, so I'm just going to move Kalindor to Ruidan.
All right, then.
Well, if you want to know...
I like it, and I hate it at the same time.
Well, if you want to know what we think we should expect in Season 2, we'll be recording that episode in 2 weeks with another guest. So, yeah, if you have thoughts and ideas that you want to pollute our brains with, by all means, feel free to share them. You know, conditioning. Brainwashing. Other words. Anyway, thank you all so much,
Savannah,
for tuning in to the Black Tower Podcast. Taviran Tavern, thank you so much for agreeing to make this mistake. I mean, for joining us on this episode. It's fantastic.
Mistake I've ever made.
Oh, hey,
so kind.
And you have kids. What? I didn't say that.
Your kids are lovely.
They're amazing.
Yeah, it's my favorite mistake since I signed my oath of enlistment. Again, thank you so much. This has been a ton of fun. Anybody listening, anybody watching, we thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to put us in the background on a computer and putting us out of sight and semi out of mind. And hopefully we haven't made your job consider whether they should keep you on or not if you got us on speaker. But if we have, you're welcome. Because when one door closes, another Tirangrial opens.
Indeed.
Or somebody gets a spear to open, you know, another door for you to get out of. Who knows? But here at the end of the episode, we're going to play a 30-second promo. I almost said 30 minutes. That'd be ridiculous. A 30-second promo for another fantastic podcast you should definitely go and check out. We're going to let them tell you about what they do in quickly 30 seconds here at the end before you hear the outro music.
Are you itching for a good story? Laughter among friends, maybe even a mystery or two? Well, you're in luck. Firebreathing Kittens is a standalone Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Each episode is a separate 3-hour long story, like a movie for your ears, so you can listen to these adventures in any order you like. So join us on a real play D&D quest as we solve mysteries, attempt comedic banter, and enjoy friendship. Firebreathing Kittens Podcast, fantasy, action, mystery, friendship.
For all of us here at the Black Tower Podcast, Josh has been out in the field and sends his love and appreciation and probably a ton of laughs. And yeah, just
so
a ton of laughs.
Yeah. I'm actually almost glad he wasn't here tonight. Ouch. Not actually.
Wow.
But almost. I'm not sure we would have made it through as much stuff if there had been much Josh fucking laughter as I assume there would have been.
You know, it's one of the things, like, when it's just the three of us, like, our logical flow of conversation just, like, not seamlessly, but pretty easily flows. Like a dam, like, during, like, a mild flood season. we have a guest on, they make amazing points, and like all of us at the same time go, but here's this thought on it. It's fun, but it's also like, hey, your time just got extended by like an hour.
And then you also get a lot of this.
Knee slapping laughter. But yes, I have been your Bajan Mihail, Andrew.
And I have been your Amon Khan Mihail, Daniel. And again, from all of us here at the Black Tower, including our on-location Ashaman, thank you so much for coming. We hope that everything is going your way today. And in case we don't see you again, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Always running the show. In the tower, you can bring your pain. In the tower, you can feel the strain. You've been having so much trouble just fitting.